Welcome back to the No Name Football Podcast. I'm here as usual with my partner, Carmel Catholic head coach, 9-year NFL vet, Florida Offensive Player of the Year. The guy needs an introduction wherever he goes so people understand his greatness.
All lies.
My guy, Jason McKee. J-Mac, today we get to start our podcast with the guy who's been covering the Bears since 2001. I remember Biggs, man. Yeah. Me and Biggs, we always had like a comment for each other on the way down the hallway. Mm-hmm. But he's still with the Chicago Tribune. He contributes on the Score. I want to welcome my friend Brad Biggs onto the show. Biggs, what's up, man?
How are you guys today? Happy to be back.
Now, thanks for joining us, Big. It's always a pleasure to have you on the pod. And like we always do, when we're graced with your presence on this
summer,
great podcast.
It's summertime.
Yeah, you know what we're going to talk about, Biggs. I know training camp has started, but before we get to that, we always talk barbecue. We know you're a barbecue connoisseur. What have you been working on so far this summer? What's the most recent thing you've done on the grill?
Yeah, I did a brisket last weekend, and that turned out pretty well and was able to freeze some of it. So we'll have some more brisket in the near future. I'm thinking next week I want to get a turkey breast on there, guys. You just get the right amount of smoke, you know, not too much. You don't want to overpower the meat. But I'm thinking about a turkey breast next week, and that'll go well for a couple meals anyway.
I mean, I like turkey breast, but I'm going to go pork belly. Yeah. I'm a pork belly kind of. Yeah. I want that fat while I'm drinking that beer. Biggs, what cigar went good with that brisket while you were cooking it?
Oh, shoot. I mean, well, I started that thing at like midnight. So I just had a nice Nicaraguan with some flavor, made sure everything was operating smoothly, and then I went to bed.
Right. Okay. Hey, listen, that's part of protocol. You have to do it.
Oh, yeah. You got to wait.
Yeah. And then got up about 6:30, got a coffee. Everything was going well. And eventually got something a little more mild in the morning. But it was a nice day. Good way to spend the rare off day in training camp.
Mm. One more question about barbecue before we get to the Bears, Biggs. So I know most barbecue gurus, they're up in the air on whether they get their meat from the grocery store or the butcher. What type of guy are you? Do you go to the butcher or are you a grocery store guy to get your meat?
The butcher, you're paying top dollar. So yeah. I'll go to the butcher for a few things, but, if you're doing like pork shoulder, that you don't, like, the butcher's not going to tell you some prime cut of pork shoulder, in my opinion. Yeah. So I will, shop around for a good price. I'll go to Costco. Buddy will swing in the Restaurant Depot for me. My guy Barbecue Jimmy. So I will bargain shop usually for the stuff I'm throwing on the smoker just to make it a little more economical.
Well, Biggs, as we get to the Bears, I'll start where you probably would expect me to start. And obviously, it's part of Chicago culture to beg for wide receivers, cornerbacks, and quarterbacks in the draft and then complain about the offensive line the rest of the year and wonder why it never gets fixed when you don't put any assets there. But start there for us, Biggs. I know the Tevin Jenkins situation has been talked about a lot. Obviously, there hasn't been much information given out there. But interestingly enough, Braxton Jones seems to be a front runner there at left tackle, which is interesting for me. I thought he was 1 or 2 years away from starting.
Yeah, with Braxton Jones being at left tackle with the starters for, I would say, the majority of the reps in the first 2 days of full pads, that's a big sign. That's a tell with what direction the coaching staff might be leaning. Now, we got to see what things look like Friday when they return to practice. They will be in full pads again. But when you get to this weekend, I'm talking the practices Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I would imagine how they're lining up by the end of this weekend is a good indicator of how they will line up a week from Saturday. I think it's the 13th. When they have the preseason opener at Soldier Field against the Kansas City Chiefs. You don't want to get to Tuesday or Wednesday of next week and sort of reshuffle it and then say, okay, guys, this is how we're going to line up. When Eberflus has said they will play the first team against the Chiefs. So if Braxton Jones is still at left tackle, primarily with the ones this weekend, that's an indicator to me, yeah, this guy's got a chance. Now, who's he battling against? They signed Riley Reiff right before training camp started, the veteran with, what's he got, 120-some-odd starts under his belt, left tackle, right tackle. I don't think he's battling Riley Reiff for that left tackle job. I think what they're looking at is Braxton Jones versus Larry Borum, who's been playing at right tackle, but the last couple of days Reiff has been with the starters for most of the snaps at right tackle. You know, how are they better with Braxton at left tackle and Reiff at right tackle, or Reiff at left tackle and Larry Borum at right tackle? That's probably part of the discussion right now as they try to select the five best players to have on the field.
Biggs, I'm going to go, you know, you talked about Braxton Jones, and we'd already know about Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker, a lot of the rookies making headlines in camp. Who are some of the other rookies that have been opening up some eyes that we haven't really heard a lot about?
Well, I think Bayless Jones, a wide receiver, we've seen him in a variety of different roles. I think they're going to lean on this guy to make some plays for him this year. I think we're going to see him line up in the slot. We'll see him lined up out wide. We will probably on occasion see him lined up in the backfield. You know, he's got that electric athletic ability with the combination of speed and quickness and lateral movement that he could be a big playmaker. You talk about who are the playmakers in this offense. Well, we know what Darnell Mooney can do, and we know about the relationship that he's kind of developed with Justin Fields. But I look at Bayless as a guy who they're going to count on having a productive rookie season. And then to double back on the offensive line, you know, they've given other rookies some opportunities earlier in camp than you might have expected before it started. Mm-hmm. Some of it's injury related, with Lucas Patrick out with his right thumb injury. Saw him kind of looking on the other day with a cast on that right hand, right thumb. But Doug Kramer, the rookie from Illinois, has gotten some snaps with the ones. We've seen Jatari Carter get some snaps at right guard with the ones. And even Zach Thomas, another rookie, has gotten a few looks here and there with the first team as well. So providing some experience for these younger guys. And then should not forget Dominique Robinson, the edge rusher they got out of Miami of Ohio, has shown some real athletic ability on the edge. And I think he's another guy, a fifth-round pick, who's going to probably get some playing time in the rotation this season to see what he can do. Because really, I think when you step back and look at it and say, what's this 22 Bears season going to be all about? It's got to be about the development of young players, guys that you need to bring along with the hope that a good portion of them can be sort of part of the foundation that you're trying to put in place here for a new front office, new coaching staff.
Hey, Biggs, big in the outside zone scheme is the tight end blocking of them getting that edge for that running back so he can press it and then cut it back. Because if the tight end is getting collapsed at the point of attack, you got a real problem in your outside zone run game. How, in your eyes, has Cole Kmet, his development, like you talked about, these young guys developing, that's huge. I'm always smiling to myself when I'm reading on Twitter and other places about him catching the ball. Could care less about him catching the ball over the middle. I want to know how his blocking's going, how he's developing. You know, if you think about Kittle in the San Francisco scheme, I mean, that guy blocks that edge. It's huge. Ryan Griffin, James O'Shaughnessy. What have you seen from this tight end group so far?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Kmet's a guy with some experience who just probably needs to be a little more consistent doing this, and he's learning some new techniques. He's probably got to focus on this. Griffin's a guy with experience, and Griffin, I will say this, for his kind of clunky as that first team offense has looked throwing the ball through training camp so far, and I think that was probably to be expected. You didn't think they were going to get to training camp and this was going to look like a juggernaut right away. But Griffin's been a guy who has he seemed relatively nuanced in his route running in the red zone, made some plays for Justin Fields to this point. But he's a guy with experience blocking. I think O'Shaughnessy is as well. And when you consider their wide receiver group as a whole, and you look at what the coordinator's background is, you know, Luke Getsy comes from the Packers. I think the Packers were second in the league last year in terms of using 12 personnel with two tight ends, two wide receivers, and one back on the field. So we could see a lot of different combinations with those three, Komet, Griffin, O'Shaughnessy, as the Bears try to put opposing defenses in conflict. How do you want to defend that? Do you want to use your base personnel? Do you want to use nickel? And can the Bears be successful in that outside zone running scheme with these tight ends?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Biggs, I'm glad you mentioned that, and it goes well with my next question. You wrote an article this morning talking about Kyrie Blasingame, the fullback. So, you know, I'm going to ask you about that. And Getsy, you know, his vision for the fullback, you said it sold Blasingame to come to Chicago. Talk about what have you seen from him throughout camp, and has he been getting a lot of snaps? Because, you know, Coach Eberflus says that he wants to be a hard-nosed physical team. And we know if you have a solid run game, it can be a new quarterback's best friend. So if they can get that running game going, it could take pressure off field. So what have you seen from Blasingame in terms of the reps he's getting in practice, and what are his chances of maybe sticking to this 53-man roster?
Yeah, that's a good question. And certainly the running game needs to be the best friend for Justin Fields in this offense. If they can run the ball effectively, you could do a couple things. Number one, you're keeping the defense off balance. Number two, you're able to stay, you know, on schedule with the sticks and avoid more of these bad situations on second down. When you're second and 10, second and 12, second and 8, I mean, those are clear passing downs in the National Football League. You need to get to second and 6 or better. And running the ball effectively will make the play-action passing game more effectively. It will open up windows for clear and defined reads for Justin Fields. And what we've seen from Blasingame, number one, yes, he has been working with the ones, and that's critical. If he's got one fullback on the roster and he's working with the twos or the threes, that's a signal that they might go from one fullback to no fullback. The Bears haven't carried a traditional fullback since the 2018 season, which was Matt Nagy's first, and they used him kind of sparingly. Michael Burton was the guy at that time. So it hasn't been a part of the offense. They have, you know, put some tight ends in the backfield and that kind of thing. Blasingame's not he's not that hammer. He's not that fullback you think of from the 1980s, even the 1990s. But he's got some size. He's got some experience as a lead blocker for Derrick Henry in Tennessee. And I think he's got some versatility. Monday of this week, guys, he made the best catch of the day. It was kind of this twisting grab, and it was probably, I don't know, 30, 35 yards downfield along the sideline. You looked at that and said, hey, here's an athletic guy who's able to jump and control his body and pull in the ball. So if he can show Fields that, I can be a dependable guy, I can be where I'm supposed to be, when I'm supposed to be there for you, I think that's what you're looking for. The model in this offense, this scheme, is Kyle Juszczyk with the San Francisco 49ers, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's sort of a Swiss Army knife in that 49ers offense. I don't know that Blasingame can get to that level, but there's really no need or requirement to put a ceiling on his ability right now. Just see what he can do. And it certainly looks like he's got an opportunity. He was a free agent. He talked to a couple teams. And the message he got from Getsy, the vision that sort of Getsy laid out for the offense, for that position in the offense, really appealed to him and made it a no-brainer to take a one-year contract from Chicago.
Yeah, and of course, the Titans run that outside zone scheme under O-line coach Keith Carter, who was brought there by Matt LaFleur. So Blasingame knows the run scheme as well as anybody in Halas Hall right now, as far as players go. Biggs, when I hear you say the Bears' run game has been looking decent at camp, when we're talking about the tight ends, I immediately think about my other biggest worry for the Chicago Bears, and that's their front seven. That's the defense's front seven, especially with Roquan Smith not in there. But their D-line, Biggs, and I know I read that Robert Quinn, they're kind of bringing him in along slowly. How has that middle of that defense looked, Biggs, without, you know, I know Roquan's not there, but Tonga, Justin Jones, Blackson, Mario Edwards Jr., they need these guys to play above the level that they've been playing at so far in their careers.
Yeah, no question about it. Blackson's the guy that they signed last year that he thought might be able to be an impact signing for them. You know, they got way more than I think people expected out of Akeem Hicks when the previous administration brought him in, and Blackson doesn't have that kind of ability, but I think last season was probably not quite to what they hoped they would get out of him, and he's missed, I believe, four practices in a row. No reason to think that it's a serious injury for Blackson right now, but he hasn't been on the field. Justin Jones is sort of the guy they pivoted to when their Cadillac plan there at the three technique position fell apart. And he's got some experience. Mario Edwards, I think, has got some versatility for him in terms of what he can do. Certainly, he can help get after the quarterback a little bit from the interior of the line. But Tonga is probably going to step into a bigger role with Blackson there at that nose position. They've got Mike Pennell, who has got some experience in the league. I would figure he's going to be a part of the rotation. You know, if you look at what Eberflus did with his defensive line in Indianapolis, there were only a couple guys that logged heavy playing time. I'm talking 70% of the snaps or more, and obviously DeForest Buckner was one of them. But he likes the idea that sort of Rod Marinelli used to talk about around here, which is keeping those guys fresh. And that means playing them in waves, rotating them, using a lot of guys. So I think we're going to see some big numbers. It's a 53-man cut in terms of D-linemen that they keep, certainly more than they've kept before when they were running a 30 front. And that's a position to keep an eye on at the end of the month, beginning of September, when cuts start to happen. You know, could the Bears eye some guys that get cast away and put on the street to bring them in? You know, you always see that with new administrations, especially when it's a clean slate, new GM, new coach. Those are teams that are often active with the waiver wire. So we could see them go out and bring in 3, 4, 5 new bodies. I don't know. You know, you always say when they cut to 53, it's not a final roster. And those guys that are 53, 52, 51, they shouldn't be too secure because their spot could be eliminated quickly. But I think it's fair to question how they're going to look in the front seven, especially when it comes to stopping the run. When you look at the scheme they're playing, the Tampa 2 is known to be vulnerable against the run. And so how they're able to play, even when they do get Roquan Smith back on the field, is probably a good question.
Yeah, and let's talk about the secondary. Let's talk about the back end. You know, we've heard, you know, Brisker and Gordon have been making plays all throughout training camp. We know Jalon Johnson is that starting corner. You know, who are some of the other guys that have been making noise in camp? I know Thomas Graham hasn't practiced. Tavon Young has been in nickel. Who are some of the other guys in that secondary you think have a chance to possibly earn a spot on the roster but also possibly earn some playing time?
Yeah, another good question. And one of the guys that sort of emerged here recently has been Kendall Vildor, with a new opportunity for a new staff that didn't bring him in. And he played a good deal last season. Wasn't great, I don't think, by any stretch. But they've had some practices now where Vildor has been lining up with the ones at that left cornerback spot. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of exclusively been using Kyler Gordon in the nickel. And so some people throw their hands up and say, well, wait a minute, how can their top pick not be a starter? But if they're in nickel anywhere close to 80% of the time, which is a number that Eberflus threw out, you know, shortly after he was hired, that's a starter, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's a critical position in any defense, that nickel cornerback. So it could be where they just want to kind of evaluate Vildor more, but Eberflus has said that they believe he's appeared to be a wing and sound tackler on the edge, which is big to him. Certainly a big part of this scheme, and we know the cornerbacks were pretty good tacklers when Lovie Smith's defense was playing at a high level for this organization. So he's a guy to keep an eye on moving forward when they get into the preseason. DeAndre Houston Carson, the veteran safety, we've seen him out there a bunch. He's kind of a guy that you can plug and play in a couple different spots on the back end. He's played some nickel for the Bears the last couple of years. He's played some dime. He's played some safety. He's clearly going to be probably their most valuable, most important player on special teams, but he's been reliable and come up with some big plays when opportunities have presented themselves for him defensively. And then Elijah Hicks, the seventh-round pick safety out of Cal, missed all the offseason program guys. He had some kind of injury that he had going into the draft, and so they wanted to make sure he was ready for camp. And Hicks has shown that he can move real well, so he's a guy to kind of keep in the back of your mind. I don't know if he's going to have an opportunity to carve out some playing time for himself right away this season, in the first half of this season, but an interesting player that the new regime has selected to keep an eye on.
Yeah, when they took Kyler Gordon, right, Biggs, out of the University of Washington, you thought about Kenny Moore, right, for the Indianapolis coach. You thought about that kind of player. So it doesn't shock you that he is in that nickel cornerback position. Biggs, we can't let you go without talking about the star of the show, the guy that we're all praying over, Justin Fields. How has he looked out there directing this offense, throwing the ball? As he looked, people talked a lot about how he worked on his footwork and his arm motion in the offseason. Have you seen any of that while you've been watching practices?
Yeah, I talked to Jim Miller recently, and Miller was out of practice for a couple of days, and he said he thought the footwork looked better. Mm-hmm. He thought it looked like Justin Fields had really put time into cleaning that up and making sure he was more balanced and in a better position. And that's something that you can't just watch some film and say, okay, I got it. You gotta watch the film. You gotta take the coaching in the meeting room. Then you gotta go out in the field and you gotta rep it over and over and over again. We're talking about, muscle memory for a guy who's accustomed to doing something a certain way. And so you've got to improve that. You've got to make changes, and those changes have to stay in place when you're facing a live defense. It's one thing to do it in individual drills. It's another thing to do it in 7-on-7 when there's no pass rush. And it's an entirely different thing to do it when you've got 11 defenders across from you and the play's live. So Fields has, there's been more tuck and scramble and check down that I think you'd like to see. But again, I'll go back to what I said previously, guys, that you would have been delusional to think that they were going to start camp and this offense was going to look like the greatest show on grass. It's going to take time. They're going to need to improve at a lot of different positions down the road to get to where they want to be. The first offense was better on Wednesday in the second day of pads than it was on Tuesday. What we're not seeing is the chunk plays downfield. I'm talking about the balls that are traveling in the air 10 yards or more beyond the line of scrimmage. We're not seeing that with any consistency, but a lot of new parts, a lot of timing involved, and a lot of time left before they get to week one and the San Francisco 49ers come to Soldier Field on September 11th.
Yeah, Biggs, talk about the receivers. You're talking about chunk plays and, Fields' weapons. We already know what Darnell Mooney can do. You talked about Velus Jones already. Who are some of the other guys? St. Brown has been in this offense with Getsy up there in Green Bay. N'Keal Harry came over from the Patriots trying to revitalize his career. Who are some of the other guys in terms of receiver that you can see, helping Fields throughout the season?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, Matt Eberflus was asked about that position on Wednesday, guys. He said he was encouraged by the group, and he liked the energy, he liked the size, and he liked their physical nature blocking on the edge. And I'm sitting there and I'm kind of thinking,
tight ends.
Okay, all of that sounds good, but I like to hear explosive. Yep. I like to hear playmakers. I like to hear speed. I like to hear catch radius, ability to make contested catches downfield. None of the stuff that you really want to hear is what we heard. So St. Brown's interesting because physically he's put together 6'5", long arms, he can run. Guys, the Green Bay Packers were in a wide receiver crisis this offseason. They didn't bring him back. Mm-hmm. That's a little concerning to me. I think it should, you should keep that in the back of your mind when you think about expectations for this guy this season. But he's put together some good practices here lately. Byron Pringle paid him a little bit of money, was a guy who was making plays as a secondary option in Kansas City for Patrick Mahomes. Had some drops here in camp, but he's certainly a player that I think the GM, Ryan Poles, looked at as an ascending guy who could do more when given a larger role, which he's certainly going to have here than he would have had remaining with the Chiefs. N'Keal Harry, I don't have super high expectations for him, guys. You know, he talked about having a chip on his shoulder. That's cliche for every guy who didn't pan out in one place and is looking to prove himself in another spot. Now, he had some injuries in New England. The COVID year was no good for any young player in the National Football League, and it just never really clicked for him there. Another guy with size and speed, we've got to see him do it. We've seen Dante Pettis make some plays for Justin Fields here lately, but this is a work in progress in a group that I think your hope is Mooney has another very productive season for Fields, and you identify someone else in the group besides Bayless that you say, hey, we'd like this guy to be a part of our team in 2023, because that's going to be a position group that they're going to do a lot of work on in the offseason, you would think.
As you said, Biggs, development, development, development. Can we get some of these young guys to ascend, J-Mac, and become top 10 players at their position in the NFL? But, Biggs, thank you very much, man. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the Bears camp. And, I think we're about 9 days away to next Saturday till they open up preseason against the Chiefs.
Yeah, we'll have a lot more to talk about next time, guys. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, exactly, you watch that Chiefs game and you look for some of those young guys to take advantage of some opportunities, step forward, and kind of identify themselves to the coaches. Hey, yeah, I'm ready to be put to the test this season.
Yeah, Biggs, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. Thank you for the great insight, and we'll definitely have you back on.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great day.
You too, Biggs.
All right, take care.
Looking for a taste of the islands? Look no further than No Foods. That's NOH Foods of Hawaii. No Foods was developed to reflect the many international cultures and races of the islands. Hawaiian, Japanese, Chinese, Korean, Portuguese, Filipino, and more. Known for the wide variety of delicious seasoning and sauces. The products of No Foods can make anyone a master chef in their own kitchen. Easy to prepare and delicious in flavor are the hallmarks of No Foods. Again, that's NOH of Hawaii. Dishes like Chinese beef broccoli, Korean barbecue, Filipino adobo, Hawaiian kalua pork, and many, many more. Don't forget about the refreshing and very popular Hawaiian iced tea, sweetened with raw cane sugar and just the right touch of lemon. You can find NOH Foods online at Amazon.com and NOHfoods.com. Also in many stores and supermarkets. As we say in the islands, say yes to no. Aloha. All right, J-Mac, man, Biggs was awesome as usual. We appreciate him joining us. He always, no one pays attention. No one does more work on the Chicago Bears than Brad Biggs. But I want to continue, J-Mac, obviously with the offensive line, and I want to start with this big story about Tevin Jenkins.
Yeah.
And we've had him on our podcast. Mm-hmm. I was excited about the young man's career, him developing into the kind of offensive lineman that the Chicago Bears need, right? And his numbers obviously were great coming out of college. That's why he was thought of as a first/second round tackle. That's why people traded up, Ryan Pace traded up to get him. Hear a lot of talk about how you know, maybe he's not part of their culture, but they're saying he's injured. We heard him talk about on our podcast how he's just not loading his spine yet, and he's working to get his strength back. Wondering what you think about that whole situation, and not only that, J-Mac, but the question of developing young football players, and or when is it time to move on from a young football player?
Yeah, it's a tough situation for Tevin. You know, obviously we had him on a couple of weeks ago on our pod. He was great. But you look at it like this, brother, you know better than anybody. When a new regime comes in, new coach, new GM, they didn't draft Tevin Jenkins. So they didn't necessarily do all that draft homework on Tevin Jenkins. They inherited him. So Pace and Nagy, that was their guy. He fit their culture. That's why they drafted him so high. New regime, new culture, new scheme, new expectations. You know, here's a guy who, you know, I don't know. I don't want to comment and say he may not fit in their culture. We don't know what's wrong with him. It could be injury. But for there's something off, obviously. And here's a guy whose film was great. Obviously, he had great film at Oklahoma State. But there's something else. There's some disconnect of why he's, you know, not out there. And you talked about development, right? We looked at it last year. Okay, you drafted a guy who was injured, right? But the development, even, you know, whether did you bring him back early when he came back? Was he 100%? He came back and we know those first couple of games was kind of rocky, and it made you think, like, is this guy healthy? Are they just forcing him to be out just because he was a high pick with high expectations? So it goes back to development. Has he been developed and nurtured the right way to have success in his organization since he's got here? That's the big question I have, because it seems like, you know, you bring him in, you throw him out there, he doesn't have success, new regime comes in, you're writing him off. Like, I don't know what the disconnect is, but if you have a guy drafted that high who's an offensive line, who's offensive lineman, especially at a position that you, a high position of need, that left tackle, you know, you would think that you would do your best to develop a guy who's got a lot of potential. You would do your best to develop and make sure that you put him in a position to have success and not just give up on him.
Yeah, I just, like, you know, this offensive line has been a problem now since, you know, 2019, when Ryan Pace sat up there and said it was a problem. They don't have a lot of bodies there, right? They got Braxton Jones there. Brad Biggs talked to us about he looks like the left tackle. I start to wonder, man, with all the ankle injuries that Riley Reiff has had, it makes me wonder out loud, are those affecting his ability to even play left tackle? Can he even be a left tackle anymore in the NFL because of his ankle problems? Now, he could come out there and prove us completely wrong, like Jason Peters did last year, right? When they signed Jason Peters, I was like, how do you expect to get a guy off a boat and him to perform well? Well, the Hall of Fame tackle came on and said, Olin, shut your mouth. Watch me block people. Yeah. So, you know, proved us wrong. But you were mentioning, we always see it from a player's point of view. I like to look at it too. Like, you're talking about the organization and the culture. I like to think that any player fits into my culture. If I develop him, if I take my time, if I get him right, it almost says to me that whatever plan you have for him in the offseason didn't work. The losing weight, the way you were training him, the way you were developing him. Now we get to camp and he's got what they say is injury. And my first guess is his back is flared up again. But I, of course, went on ChicagoBears.com and I'm like, well, how many people, because I think a lot of fans don't understand how many people are actually in the building. Their title, their job is to develop young football players, right? So you just go through ChicagoBears.com and their front office. They have a guy named Mike Wiley Jr. His name, his title is Director of Player Development and Mental Skills. So I like to ask Mike Wiley Jr., what were you doing for Tevin Jenkins, right? Brent Salazar. Clyde Emmerich, Director of High Performance. Blair Hitchcock, Director of Sports Nutrition. AJ Lamb, Sports Scientist. Andre Tucker is a Head Athletic Trainer. They got a guy, Tristan Askin, Director of Rehabilitation Services. They got four assistant trainers. They got Coach Morgan, the O-line coach. J-Map, I just named 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 online coach plus 4. I see 11 people. It's 11 people that are part of developing a player like Tevin Jenkins, right? A player that people say, well, if he doesn't buy in, get rid of him. Okay, slow down. they don't, tackles are not, they don't grow on trees now.
Right.
6'6", 6'7", guys, over 300 pounds that can run, that can block, that can move their feet, that play with a certain mentality. They don't grow on trees.
Yeah.
So when you got one, you might want to try to develop him. But now, like you're saying, we don't know the full story.
Right.
We don't know everything that's going on. They may not. All this stuff breaks. You don't even know if they're trying to trade him. That stuff just breaks all of a sudden. It's just out there. Coach Eberflus talking about he has an injury he's dealing with. If I'm Coach Eberflus, if I'm George McCaskey, if I'm Ted Phillips, if I'm Ryan Poles, if I'm Ian Cunningham, I'm getting in somebody's you know what, yeah. right? Because now we're on the radio, and now we're on the radio, so we can't swear anymore. Yeah. But I'm getting some because why isn't he ready to go?
Yeah.
Why didn't I hear about this in March or April?
Yeah.
Why did I hear this might be a problem? Why did I have him on the field in minicamp, but I can't get him out here in August?
Yeah, if you're the head guy, you know, I'm going to all those guys you mentioned. You know, we're having a meeting collectively, and I'm saying, show me the outline of the plan that you had to make sure that our potential left tackle can help contribute this year. You know, contribute in a way that, you know, play the way we envisioned him playing when he was brought here. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the question that, you know, Coach Flus should be asking these guys. And another thing you brought up too, brother, you know, tackles don't grow on trees, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you had a tackle that started, I don't know how many games, in Charles Leno that you just let go, and then you turn around and draft Tevin Jenkins. So you had some, you had a constant, a guy who was going to play for you, a guy who was going to be available. And we know one of the best ability to, in this league is availability. Availability.
And like, you know, we know that wasn't a decision the current regime made.
Yeah, for sure.
But here's something that I don't know, rubs me the wrong way as a former NFL football player, is when I hear guys on the Twitter or on the radio or anything, when a name like Tevin Jenkins comes up or a situation like this, and all of a sudden everyone's saying, well, he's got all these problems and he doesn't buy in. And, well, that was the other regime's mistake.
Yeah.
Gosh, what a bailout, right? Yeah. What a bailout by people to say, well, that wasn't us. Like that was the other regime. That was their mistake. I don't know, man. I don't know about you, J-Mac, but if I'd like to believe that my building fits most NFL players, because you have to remember how little of these guys are out there.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me that the Chicago Bears, if this is what's going on, again, I want to keep saying, we don't know if this is what's going on.
Right.
This is just, we got to talk about what we hear come out of camp. If the Chicago Bears can so easily move on from a guy who everyone had as a top three, first through third round pick in the NFL draft. Brandon Thorne was on our podcast raving about this guy.
Yeah.
He's got talent. The Bears have an offensive line problem.
Yep.
They have had an offensive line problem. They got an older guy in Riley Reiff. They got Larry Borum. They don't know what they got in him. And they got Braxton Jones, young rookie. You have a tackle problem. If anything, I want to keep him around in case somebody gets injured.
Yeah. And the worst thing that can happen is, you know, you move on from Tevin Jenkins. He goes somewhere and he actually gets the development that he should have had here and becomes a perennial Pro Bowler. You know, you go to an organization that really upholds the culture and standards that you're setting in place. Because let's be honest, brother, every team in this league, they're all striving for the same culture. They all want players that hustle. They all want players that play fast. They all want players that's physical. Now, what separates the good teams from the mediocre teams to the teams at the bottom of the barrel is the organization actually upholding that standard, committing to excellence to make sure that their players know exactly what's expected of you when you set foot in that building. That's the difference between winning and losing in this league, right? All these coaches talk about culture, but it's the coaches and organizations that live, breathe, and walk that culture on a daily basis that get the most out of their players. Now, there's some coaches that say it, they don't live it, right? They can talk about all they want in front of the microphone, in front of a camera, right? But you know whether or not that culture is being implemented and in place by the level of success they've had or lack thereof.
And I always say to people, if you're getting rid of a player because, say, the position coach can't get along with him, you better hope that coach is worth it.
Yeah.
You better hope he's that kind of guy, that kind of high level position coach. But like we talked about, man, whatever's going on there, I like to see it work out because I think they need bodies at that position. They need competition. My guess, J-Mac, just looking at the whole offensive line is talent wise, and me and you have seen a lot of talented guys not make it. So we know the other side of the story, right? You don't have to tell us. We know. We've seen guys talented refuse to work. We've seen guys talented refuse to buy into the culture. We've all seen that.
Yeah.
If this is what's going on there, then they do have decisions to make. But as a coach, can I get the best out of this guy? Especially this year. Especially when I don't have a lot of people.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of guys, offensive linemen. I'm already having to play Braxton Jones at left tackle. I've already lost Lucas Patrick to a hand injury. I've already had to move Sam Mustafer back to center. I got to take a look at Doug Kramer. I brought in Schofield, a guy who's probably better as a backup, but he's got some experience, right? And playing Jatari Carter, another seventh round.
Young guy.
A small college young guy in front of Justin Fields. So, Tevin Jenkins has showed us that last year that he can compete sometimes on NFL level when his back's not bugging him, when he's not injured. I like to see him succeed. I like to see him get the best out of him. But, Jay, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes that even me and you could ever guess.
Yeah, and it'll all play out, you know, hopefully for the good for the Bears. But it'll be interesting to see if we do see Tevin Jenkins in the Bears uniform this year. You know, I hope so, because I do, you know, based upon, you know, us seeing the film that Brandon Thorne has showed us and the way Brandon Thorne broke him down. You know, I think he does have a lot of promise, especially, you know, something that you need with a questionable offensive line right now. And, you know, going further, you look at this offense as a whole, brother, and we talked about it before we started the pod, is the offensive scheme, the new scheme that Getsy's implementing here, right? And we know we've gone through a couple different schemes. We had a couple different offensive coordinators our time in Chicago. Some of the challenges that these players face from going from one scheme to another. And, you know, the fans may not realize how hard it is, how difficult it is, but it is difficult because, you know, in the NFL, the terminology or the verbiage of a play is so difficult. It's so difficult. Some of the verbiage and terminology is real long, some of it's short, but in terms of what you're calling the routes, the protections, right? You could be used to doing something one way. As a running back, you can be used to running a swing route. It's called a swing in one offense, and now it's called a wide. Like, little things like that are big changes for an offensive player in this league. Mm-hmm. Those are big changes that they have to overcome. And that's why offensively, you know, especially in training camp, we're always going to be a little bit behind because it takes time to understand the scheme, to understand the verbiage, to understand the nuances, to understand what you are trying to accomplish as an offense as a whole. And you're still getting a feel for your offense, a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and I don't think any of us were shocked when the report started coming out that the offense was struggling a little bit, right? Because, well, there's where you got to start. They don't have a Pro Bowler at any position on the whole offense, right? So they don't have, per se, a lot of talent. They would have to develop young guys to ascend to this Pro Bowl type players. That's what they need, first of all. And then, like you're saying, it's hard to put in a new scheme, man. It's hard to get the new verbiage, like you're talking about. Offensive line coaches all call things differently. They want things done a little differently. Wide receiver coaches, Tyke Tolbert, he wants the route run just a little different than you're used to. It takes a while to get used to that, right? Like, Jess, I was just thinking, in 98, I came in, I had Matt Cavanaugh was my offensive coordinator. Then they made John Shute was the offensive coordinator. Yeah. And I missed Gary Croton. And midseason, Gary Croton left and they put John Shute in charge.
Yeah.
Then they left and then it was Terry Shea. Then Terry Shea left and it was Ron Turner.
Yeah.
Then Ron Turner left and it was Mike March. So I've been through this a lot where it takes a little bit of time. A really good example, I think, is that 2010 year when we went to the NFC Championship game. And we didn't have a lot of talent, just like this offense, right? But everyone just kept getting a little better every week. The coaches started to gel. Mike Martz and Coach Tice, that's a story for a whole nother time. But they had to work some kinks out. Let's put it nicely. They had to work a few kinks out. But like you're saying, J-Mac, getting everybody on the same page on the offense, I mean, you're looking at, they're going to be working on that in week one.
Yeah, for sure.
And Getsy's adjustments, like Getsy's never called plays in NFL. So, and all these coaches had never all coached together and all the players never all played. So, lack of talent and then a brand new scheme. And you're going to have some days that look really bad on an offense.
Yeah, plus you look at it like this, right? You look at the lack of padded practices that you're allowed to have now. You look at how many mandated days off these teams have to have, right? So you look at it, right? These guys have been running plays, especially the run plays, on air for a long time, right? They just got in pads this week, right? It's a lot different when you're going against a full padded defensive lineman, you're trying to run outside zone, or now your tight end's trying to get outside and block that nine technique. It's a lot different than doing it on air. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. it's going to take even longer in terms of the development. Okay. Like you said, right? Running back now, David Montgomery, right? He's been used to running inside zone, right? Now we're majoring in outside zone. Your steps change, right? Your aiming points change, right? You have a different running back coach, right? He wants you to do different things, than what the previous running back coach did. Offensive line, right? You guys, yeah, you have a new offensive line coach. So now your technique may change completely different from what you guys did with the previous offensive line coach. So it's a lot of things that go on, that go along with just a new scheme. The players have to, you know, have a new way of thinking and have to embrace it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they may be used to doing things that they're, you know, technique wise that they've been used to under the old regime. Mm-hmm. And now it's a complete 360. Now you got to do it this way. It takes time. You know, it's like going from being a right-handed person who writes right-handed, and all of a sudden they want you to be a left-handed, you know, write left-handed. It takes time. It takes development.
It takes development of the offense, right? And like if you don't have a tremendously talented offensive group, your advantage has to be execution. So it's going to take these guys a little bit of time, and they got to buy into Luke Getsy. And Luke Getsy has to be honest with you. I'm like, guys, we don't have any. You know, unless Velus Jones or Brad Biggs talk about him, right? And that just tells you when a rookie comes in and they're trying to feed him the ball, they don't know where to go with it, right? Darnell Mooney, always very productive wide receiver, but does he scare a defense? He may develop into that.
Yeah.
But will Cole Kmet be, right? Their weapons, and we all know the offensive line questions. But it's going to be an interesting year, but they have to, as an offense, Justin Fields as a leader, whoever the leaders of that offense is, they got to get everybody in the room and say, guys, we're not very talented here.
Yeah.
So our execution is critical. Like, we have to know, J-Mac, you coach little league, you coach high school football.
Yep.
Details is everything, man. And for this offense, for this group, and we talked about a little bit before we came on, what an opportunity for a group of young NFL football players. You don't get this everywhere.
Yeah, no.
They're trying to develop guys. They're trying to find guys to fit their culture, fit their scheme. You're going to get a chance to get a lot of film this year if you're a young guy. We heard about Brad Biggs talk about Jatari Carter getting snaps with the ones. J-Mac, I came in my first year as a third rounder and didn't get snaps with the ones.
Yeah.
Right? So it's really an interesting situation to watch, but it's going to take Luke Getsy. He's going to have to out-coach some defensive coordinators for this offense to succeed, and it's going to take the players, J-Mac, working day in and day out on the little things and learn this offense, but that all takes time.
Yeah, another thing too, brother, it's the chemistry, right? Mm. We talk about the scheme, but the scheme would get you far, but the chemistry will help get you wins as well, right? The chemistry. So many new receivers in this building, right? Justin Fields, the main one he's most familiar with is Darnell Mooney, obviously, and then Cole Kmet, who's been there, right? So many new guys you brought in, whole new offensive line, new offensive scheme. Justin Fields, guess what, buddy? You got to be the glue guy. You got to be the gel guy. You got to help bring these guys together. You got to be the guy that orchestrates and orchestrates this chemistry because, you know, these guys haven't played with one another, right? But they're going to be, I've got to be able to trust the man next to me to do his job. So Justin Fields, you've got to be what we always talk about, brother. You got to be the multiplier, right? Mm-hmm. I've got to make sure my offensive line knows the protection. I got to make sure my new receiver knows what I'm thinking about when I look at cover two, when we have this route concept call. Those are all things that you have to develop chemistry and a rapport with your players. So that way you can have success and you can speed up that success offensively on the football field. And those are some of the biggest things that we need to see from Justin Fields as a quarterback, right? It's one thing to be athletic. We talk about it as athleticism. We talk about his arm, right? Mm-hmm. But the one thing that we know that makes you a successful quarterback in this league is being able to make everybody around you better. Mm-hmm. We see it all the time, and I hate to mention it up there in Green Bay. You see Aaron Rodgers, right? No matter who he has out there catching passes for him, no matter who shuffles in the offensive line, he makes everybody better, right? Because he lets guys know exactly what's expected of them. And when they're not doing their job, he gets in their face and lets you know you got to get better. Tom Brady's the same way. He's not above everybody. Everybody who talks about Tom Brady as a teammate says he's just one of the guys because he knows when he messes up, the coach is going to get in his behind. He knows if one of the receivers messes up, Tom Brady's going to get in their behind and make sure they're right. That's the culture. That's the standard. That's sustained success, something that we haven't had here in a long time. Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest question marks for Justin Fields. Can he take that next step as a leader? Not just the next step as a quarterback, but he has to take the next step as a leader if the Bears want to have a successful season and put points on the board offensively.
Was Aaron Rodgers talking about I read today that I didn't read the story, so I don't want to like it is a podcast, but
yeah,
did a hallucinogen and that's how he got better at football. Did you see this?
He came to camp.
He plays for Green Bay, but
I try to hate him, but yeah, you can't hate on him. Dude's good.
You do enjoy how he doesn't care. He does
Dude's
not,
a beast, man.
He doesn't care much about anything. But you know, J-Mac, to your point, you know, may we suggest on this podcast that the offensive guys, someone like Justin Fields, you know, get everybody together, buy some pizza.
Thank you.
Extra meetings, man. Just put in hours. You can't, in this NFL, you cannot just talk about being good, man.
Yeah,
you
got to put,
you know, if they need someone to be honest in that building, I'll walk in and say, guys, most of you guys are not very good. You're on the bubble. Yeah. You're lucky you're here, but you're lucky with the Bears because there's not a lot of talent here.
They ain't going to let you in, brother.
Yeah.
I'm just letting you know. Right? No, I don't think so.
I got to be honest. I got to say this about the Chicago Bears.
Okay.
I've gotten calls all camp. Mm-hmm. You're more than welcome at the building, Nolan. Bring your family. They do. I can't, you know, I don't want to lie about the Bears. You know, please bring your family. I don't care if you believe me. I'm telling you.
I know. I just want to go with you when you go. That's all.
You want to see their face?
I wanted to see.
I got to, J-Mac, I always tell the truth. So they do invite me there. I don't want to act like they don't invite me there. They do. They invite me to the building. I'm waiting for my invite to George's office, but I haven't got that yet. Jay, before we leave, we only got, now we're on a clock now with this radio.
I'm telling you, man.
The defensive, I made a prediction that everybody would talk about the offensive line to start the year, but the defensive line is going to be what everyone starts talking about as midseason goes. Now, they could have guys ascend to, but you're not convincing me that this is a dominant front seven. This is not a dominant front seven that the Chicago Bears are lining up right now, right? Robert Quinn, we all know what he's capable of, right? He rushes the pass. This guy is Gumby. But after that, Justin Jones, Kyrese Tonga, Blackson, right? Mario Edwards Jr., Pinnell, Al-Quadin Muhammad. Like these guys, J-Mac, that's a lot of backups I just named.
Yeah.
That's a lot of guys who are have to prove to you, just like the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nicholas Morrow. Like when I look at this front, J-Mac, as a former center, I don't know about you as a fullback, I want to run ISO.
Yeah.
I want to run downhill right at him. Right now, Roquan Smith, when he does come back, he makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. This guy is a football player. But wondering what you think, J-Mac, as we go on here. I think this run's defense is going to rear its head as the Chicago Bears' biggest weakness.
Yeah, like you said, again, more guys that are unproven, but will have an opportunity to make a name for themselves. Mm-hmm. And we see it every year in the NFL, right? You have a guy that just comes out of nowhere and has a great season, right? Well, this guy has been developing, and he's also been waiting to have an opportunity to showcase his ability. And let's hope that, you know, guy you talk about, Al-Qadim Muhammad, who's been over there with Coach Flews over there in Indianapolis, you know, a guy they brought over here, a guy who have a chance to make an even bigger name for himself. You mentioned all those guys, Kyrese Tonga. These guys have what you want as a potential NFL star, opportunity. What are you going to do with that opportunity? You know, Nicholas Morrow, a guy who was out last year, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to be one of the starting linebackers for a history franchise that has a great history and tradition of having great linebackers. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with that opportunity? So all these guys will have a chance to make a name for themselves, but also have a chance to improve this defense. And, you know, that's what the Bears are banking on both sides of the ball, right? We say the offensive defensive line is the heartbeat of a team, right? Where right now it's a crapshoot. It's an unknown. Mm-hmm. There's no constant on either side of the ball. The only constant that we know on the defensive side is Robert Quinn, mm-hmm. right? Who's the constant on the offensive line? We don't know.
We don't know.
It's a crapshoot right now.
Guys got to develop, man. Tonight, J-Mac, the Oakland Raiders play the Jacksonville Jaguars. The season starts, the Hall of Fame
preseason
game.
Man.
I got to watch my guy Alex Bars. He's playing for the Raiders now.
Yeah.
Another guy who's trying to develop, trying to make the NFL. So I'll be excited to watch him. We got to look at the padded practices, decide what practice me and you're going to there at Halas
Home. Definitely, man. We'll take
a picture. We'll take a picture with George. Me, you, and George. That's our goal.
He's been out there greeting fans. Yeah. I know he'll take a picture with us.
J-Mac, fun as usual, man.
Yes, sir.
Hey, guys, it's Olin Cruz, and I want to tell you about Tequila Embajador, the official tequila of the No Name Podcast. Whether it's celebrating a big win or just kicking back after work, adding Tequila Embajador takes every gathering to the next level. The care, quality, and patience put into each and every bottle of Tequila Embajador can be tasted from the first sip to the last. And it's why we're honored to call them our teammates. Go to their website, embajadortequila.com, and use the code KICKOFF10 and receive your discount on your next purchase of Tequila Embajador, the official tequila of the No Name Podcast.
Well, that does it for our show today on the No Name Football Podcast. We thank all of our listeners for listening and supporting us on all the social media platforms. Make sure you download our podcast. We're on all the platforms, Spotify, iTunes, whatever your choice is. Make sure you download it. Make sure you tell your friends and family. Give us a rating if you like. Hopefully it's a 5-star rating, but if not, give us a rating anyway. We like your feedback and criticism, that things we can improve on upon our show. But before we go, as usual, man, I want to suit up right now. In the words of the great Mike Brown, you guys keep making plays in life, and we'll keep making these great podcasts for you. We're out. We'll see you next time, Chicago. Take care. God bless.
Mahalo.